What is it you want, Barry? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say the word and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, dying time's here.
Come with me if you want to live.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
The Force will be with you. Always.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to 20th Century Geek. I'm your regular host, Scott Weatherly, and we are back for some Jackie Chan action. And as always, I'm joined by Jack for Jack's Musings. How are you doing, Jack? You okay?
I'm wonderful, thank you. Yeah, in many ways, I'm wonderful. As you know, we're talking off air, it's Easter break. I'm also sad that this journey is coming to a close, though. This has been great fun.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's you know, there are more police story films, but this is like the original quadrology. And I was looking into this because they changed tone, and I think, you know, Jackie tried to do some different things. But this has been a really interesting sort of look at that sort of, you know, the growth of Jackie Chan. There was supposed to be a fifth, from what I read, and it became Mr. Nice Guy. They retooled it and it became something else. So, you know, there could have been there. But this has been an interesting journey. Mm-hmm. On the whole. Gone from a rather gritty ish beginnings to a baby seal hat. So
yeah, it's true. It's not many people that could pull that transition off, is there?
No. So it's, you know, and we will talk about that transition across the four films, I think. But we're going to be talking about Jackie Chan's first strike, which is regarded as Police Story Part 4. It says the fourth installment of Jackie Chan's Police Story film franchise has our hero trying to locate a missing nuclear warhead all over the globe. And this is this is very globe-trotting. And has some interesting sort of, as a baby seal hat and a koala in a bedroom as well.
Yes. I did some research on that, some like first-person research. One of my closest friends is born and raised Australian, so I hit him up as I was watching the movie about that. So when we get there, remind me.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So we are talking, like, say, First Strike. But Jack, what are your first thoughts then? What's your initial thoughts and overview of First Strike?
I think it doesn't need to be a police story movie. I mean, it's good fun.
Yeah.
We spoke right back in the first episode about I was doing my own, like, Jackie Chan, and I was watching quite a few of his movies, and I'd watched one with my eldest son. We actually didn't go back and watch any more. We've been entrenched in rewatching the MCU. I don't know if I've mentioned in like chronological order.
Oh, okay.
Start from Captain America, and then obviously making our way to Captain Marvel and on. So we got distracted by that. But this is one I think I'm going to suggest, because I think he would really get a lot out of this movie.
Yeah.
He's 11 going on to just about to turn 12. So I think he will really get a lot out of this. And also it might be a nice lead into some James Bond, because we haven't done any of the James Bonds yet. Because again, I feel like he probably would watch them, but wouldn't appreciate them yet.
I think there's an age.
This might be a nice way to lead him.
Yeah, I think, like they say, I always think there's an age limit. It's like, because there's a change in Hollywood, isn't there? There's a changing style. And if you go back and watch those first Sean Connery films, they are very, very different to, you know, modern sort of spy and action films. So there's a kind of a setting of expectation. Like, yeah, you know, wait till you get to, like, GoldenEye, and then you'll sort of be used, you know.
Yeah.
it becomes modern then. But yeah, this is more of a spy film. And it just sort of seems to be sort of, like you say, tangentially a police story. They're just like, yeah, we have this script. It kind of feels like we could just make it Detective Jackie Chan, or, you know, Kevin, as he's been called in some of them. And obviously, we want to bring back Uncle Bill for one final film. So it's sort of like, yeah, it's just sort of a police story by proxy, really.
Because that really is it, isn't it? It's literally the name of the character and Uncle Bill appearing, but you don't get any of the other supporting cast. There's no May in this. There's none of the other like characters we met along the way, and there isn't really the sense that this is a police investigation at all. It's a kind of slapstick comedy, fish out of water. I mean, Is it a spoof? I'm not sure whether to call it a spoof or not. I don't know if that's something
No.
you intended on talking about, but it's
Yeah.
sort of toeing that line, isn't it? Quite closely.
That's a really good shout. I hadn't really thought about it because I see it as a comedy. Because I think a spoof is takes a topic and is sort of parodying it or sort of poking fun at it. I think this is a sort of a spy comedy. There are spoofy moments, like it's definitely poking fun at like James Bond, and it even calls out Bond at one point. But this sort of feels just in like the Jackie Chan arena. Do you know what I mean? They sort of, you know, sort of, oh, he's just going to do the comedy bit. And in some cases, there were several scenes in this that you sort of watch. I think, yeah, they're kind of fun. And then you sort of, it, only in retrospect, will go like, that's kind of impressive. Well, that was like insanely dangerous.
Yeah, it ticks all those boxes in that regard, this one. I think the choreography, the action, the stunts, all of that is here, and like big ticks on all of that. It's just, yeah, I mean, just to repeat ourselves, really, it just doesn't really necessarily feel like it's part of this saga per se.
No, I mean, we said that when we did Supercop, that felt like it was leaning much more into sort of the comedy, and had some of that slapsticky stuff. But it was sort of like weirdly sort of added in. We sort of said it was shoehorned in. It sort of felt like they sort of kept that tone of some of the previous ones for big parts of it. I mean, it had like drug use on screen and all this other stuff, and then they'd have like someone being hit in the nuts or sort of like, you know, receiving a tray to the face or something. This is sort of done with all of that. This is, you know, this is done with all the sort of the comedy, and it, so with all the sort of grittiness, is straight into a much more sort of comedic and lighter toned adventure film.
Definitely.
Yeah, and you're right. I think this is definitely more appealing to kids. I mean, it's kind of inventive as well in some really interesting ways. And I want to get to the because when we get to the final fight, I want to sort of I'm undecided whether it's sort of a hit or a miss. I can't decide whether I like it or it annoys me.
I know what
I'm
you mean. I think
yeah.
if there's, we've probably both got one thing in mind. If this other film and this other version of the final sequence didn't exist, I think this would watch differently. But having
Yes.
seen that other sequence,
Which we'll
and
get to.
that being an intentional spoof, it really affects the watching of this, I think.
Yes, I think you're right, and we'll get to that because I think that is part of it. But let's talk about this because it starts obviously with, again, much like these films do, they throw you into the action. And Jackie has been tailing and sort of watching this woman for several days, and is just sort of handing in his report to the CIA. So again, he is working with an outside agency. And they're like, very, it's really sort of like, well done. It's at the end of another film. So well done, you can go. And it just so happens that she and somebody else get taken by, how much is a Russian or a Ukrainian strike force?
I think she's Ukrainian, isn't she? But it's a
Yes,
Russian
that's it.
baddie.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, you know, she gets taken, and Jackie just happens to see it whilst he's at a stand buying some chintz. And so follows it, and that's it. That's literally. And then it's just sort of go, and goes from there. And then so it goes into this sort of. I don't know. Actually, this opening scene. So all this bit with, you know, this. Then it sort of follow. There's a following. There's no chase particularly. It's just a follow, and then it's Jackie sort of like observing for a large portion. The first 15. Up to sort of 20 minutes of this film, up until he gets into the ski lodge, I was kind of like, oh, there's no set pieces, there's no great action. You know, it feels like it almost feels like I've missed something
No, I
in
agree.
this.
Yeah, like as same as you, I'm sure most people. I make notes and then you decide from first as we're talking. There really is very little from this point up until the ski lodge. I agree with you. Like I've got nothing other than when they first said he was going to the Ukraine, I misheard it and thought they said that he's going to the UK. And then he
I
was, and
got
then they're like, "Oh, and you don't speak the language." And I was like, "What?" They're literally. I've watched a dub version on this occasion. That you're literally talking in English right now. I
English,
don't get
yeah.
it. So, but no, You're right. It's a shame though, because that was the opportunity to harken back to that earlier gritty kind of, you know, this could have been in Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, or this could have been in one of those kind of low key spy movies. There was a chance for them to do something here to make this a standout sequence, much like in the second one when we had the whole team following the guy, and we said that was a standout moment in that movie. But I think here, just as you said, very little happens. It doesn't feel particularly compelling.
No, or even set the tone, like, you know, we said, you know, that's, you're saying, harkening back to the gritty, like, tell everyone, set the expectation, oh, we're going to be a bit sillier in this one, so we're going to have a sort of a mini chase scene, or we're going to have something like, you know, he runs up the side of that hill, and because there are jokes, there's a bit where he's talking very slowly to the driver. And he's sort of going, and the guy goes, okay. Sort of like, and so like, okay, there's little jokes, but there's nothing that's telling me, oh, the action in this is going to be more comedic. So, you know, then it just feels weird. It feels like there's an absence of something in that opening section.
Even to the point of that joke, like that was a joke without a punchline. Like that bit was okay. Get it, you know, like, oh, that classic foreigner, I'll talk a bit louder, I'll talk a bit slower. But the punchline should be that he comes back and the taxi driver's gone.
Yeah.
But we don't even get that. So that kind of sums up that missed opportunity, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly want this to be, you know, less, but there's less of the sort of the comedic stunts, and they're actually trying to make jokes. I mean, when he does, you know, follow them up to the ski lodge, and he's ill prepared. Like, everyone else has got their big hats on, big coats on, and he's just wearing like a t-shirt and like a vest.
Mm.
And the joke constantly is people telling him, "We'll put more clothes on," and he's just like, "Yeah, well, I'm trying." So you know, there are little, like, there's like running gags in certain points that sort of kind of work, but I'm still going like, "All right, well, yeah," but I haven't seen anything like, you know, almost like Laurel and Hardy level of like just swapping hats or doing something sort of like quick handed that we've seen, you know, that Jackie does. Yeah, it also feels very tame for that whole first part. Mm. Up until he gets on the snowmobile.
Yeah, because even like the snowboard scene, like, I think this sums up what you're trying to say. Like that could have been a really cool stunt. We could have been riffing on the spot. I love me. We could have done something exciting with that. But to begin with, he's sort of sitting on it and then he's lying on it, and it's all just play for laughs. I agree with you. Even we've got to get past that sequence till snowmobiles and the guys hidden in the snow, which is a really cool concept.
Yeah. Well, the ski, I'm trying to remember the order of it, because there are some really, yeah, because then obviously there's further sort of skiing and other bits and pieces that come after. Yeah, but like with the bit with the snowboard, even then, like, yeah, because it goes off to a cabin, then, doesn't it? Like it's almost like there's too many locations. It's sort of like we're going to go to this castle, and then we're going to go from the castle thing to the ski lodge, and then from the ski lodge we're going to go to this cabin. And you're like, okay, we need to condense.
He hides
this
in the back
down.
Of the car, doesn't he?
Yeah. And you want to be, if I was at the editor or something, I'd be going, you need to condense this down. Like, this, why have we got three locations in the first 20 minutes? You know, well, and also Hong Kong. You've also got, it starts in Hong Kong. So you've got like four sort of key locations in the first 20 minutes. And it's quite, I'm not saying hard to follow, but like it feels redundant because it's not like the action. The action's not playing out to take you to those locations. It's just sort of a, but as you said, it's not like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy where it's playing on tension or suspense either. So, yeah, it sort of feels redundant.
It does. Like, the castle section is completely pointless. It's just to get him into the car in order to get to the next location. So what, that could have been done from the airport. I don't know. Like, you're right. There's different ways to do it. And again, you know, comparison isn't always the best way to consider something. But, you know, think of how much we were celebrating that opening to Police Story.
Yeah.
With the favelas and the bus, and we're like, oh my God, we're so grabbed by this at the start. This does struggle to find what it wants to be until the kind of the shootout of the ski lodge, isn't it?
Yes, and that's when it kicks off. Like that's when it clearly sort of takes us. And even that, like, you know, again, he's at this point, he's got the seal hat on, the baby seal hat, which is cool and kind of cute. And
Yeah.
there is a great gag when he sort of pops his head up, and it's the seal we just see, and it looks around. Like, so there's something. There are some good gags. And when I say good, like they're not. I'm not roaring with laughter, but I'm sort of like, I'm smiling and going, oh yeah, I'm getting the tone of this film. Yeah, but it's the shootout. Once that shootout starts, and then this, and the, like you say, the people pop out of the snow. It sort of kicks into gear then, doesn't it? Like,
It does. It should just start there, really. You know, I think Bond movies, they start in the middle of a mission, don't they?
yeah.
It's like, I know this kind of does as well, but because what it's starting with is a bit boring, so we should just start. Why don't we just start with him at the ski lodge, with him
Well,
there?
yeah. Well, this is the
And then
bit
we can
you.
get a bit of backstory, can't we? A bit of exposition of like, oh, well, Jackie tailed the Ukrainian target to here. Okay, great, thanks. Now let's go.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's that's you're right. That's how a sort of a Bond film would start. Like, you put the pre credits, or you'd have something.
Like the cold open, isn't it?
Yeah,
No pun intended.
no, but like, yeah, like you say, because the start of this film is Jackie reporting to say he's been tailing this woman for like I don't know a week by the sound of it, and then he seems to get involved. When you're right, he could be on this mission, like. This whole thing could be, this whole opening could be the start. This could be the start of the film, and it's just Jackie's been sent on this mission as a sort of a, I don't know, as a sort of a joint thing between, the Hong Kong or Chinese sort of authorities and the CIA or whatever. Like you, there's ways to do it. Yeah, it just feels kind of there's a lot going on for very little progression of story.
There is, and this isn't a Jackie Chan directed movie, is it? And I
No,
think,
Stanley Tong, this is, yeah.
yeah, I do think it suffers a little bit. I don't think it's as polished. I don't think it's shorter, weirdly, but it doesn't do as much in its runtime as the previous police stories have managed to do. So I guess maybe he needed to step back. I'm sure there's lots of reasons why that was going on, but and I'm not disparaging Stanley Tong at all. I couldn't list any of his films off the top of my head now, but I'm sure if you did, I'd go, oh yeah, I've seen that and that's good. I know I've seen that and it's good, but I don't feel this is as well crafted a movie as the others either.
Yeah, well, this feels a bit more like a Saturday morning cartoon. That was my sort of, like there was a Jackie Chan Adventures. Like this feels like a cartoon in that kind of vein. And that that's what then the close this is closer to like the Jackie Chan Adventures than it is to Police Story One. However, there are still stunts in this. Because once this does get going, this whole section, like the shooting and everything else, and then like the he gets, and I'm still not sure I watched the end credits, but the bit where he gets hit in the back of the head by a snowmobile, that cannot have been intentional because that looks really, really painful.
It does, and you're right, because they don't show that, do they,
No.
in the outtakes. And it's a really interesting comparison point to the car, which I know is right at the end of the film, so I won't talk about it now until we get there. But yeah, this feels, as you said, threatening and dangerous as a counterpoint to what doesn't quite a bit later.
Yeah, because this is where the skiing, because this is where like you get that, and you get this, the snowmobile. Then it turns to like the downhill ski slope because he's got the suitcase nuke, whatever it is now. And you see people just you see, I mean, you see the skiers falling over, and people tumbling left, right, and center, and Jackie's going on the bodyboard and stuff. And that's impressive in itself. It's quite, you watch it and you go, oh, yeah. But you got to realize it's quite impressive in itself. But it leads to the helicopter stunt. And he's still only wearing this T-shirt and vest. And this is where I watched this bit and I was like, yeah. And then it sort of struck me. I was just like, no, this must have been horrific to do. So he jumps off and he grabs hold of the helicopter struts. Which is kind of cool. I always love. I just want to interject this. Having watched these kind of films, Bond films and other action films, I kind of like I'm disappointed that I've never actually come across or ridden a snowmobile I thought there'd be more. I thought there'd be more about in life. Yeah. Like, they just seem to be everywhere in the winter, but I've never ridden one or seen one. I'm kind of disappointed. But he jumps out, gets the strut of the helicopter, and it sort of hovers over the. He drops the nuke and hovers over the water.
Yeah, it's like a frozen, partly frozen lake, isn't it?
A partly frozen lake. And then he falls in it.
Well, they explode the helicopter, don't they? So he has to let go and drop.
Yeah.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah. But still, like, yeah, I mean, the helicopter, this is where I'm like, because when you do watch the end credits and you see these bits, there is him sort of holding onto that strut and just sort of blowing into his hands. And that's when I was like, yeah, that must have been like so, so cold. And he jumps in. There's a fight scene slightly underwater. And he's breaking through the ice. And the ice breaks under him at one point when he's trying to get out. All this, is this working for you, though? This sort of, because we've escalated. We've now got our first bit of action. Is this pulling you in? Are you feeling more, you know, aligned to where we have been before? Or is it still sort of like a bit of a, yeah.
No, I think I agree with you. I'm still a bit about the story and about what's going to happen because I don't understand where this is going to go next. But I am totally like about Jackie Chan as a human being.
Yeah.
Like, because I can't, do you know what I mean? Like, if somebody runs the tap in the house when you're in the shower and it goes cold, you're like, oh my God, that's the worst thing ever. But of course it's not. But compared to what Jackie put himself through there, it looks genuinely. Well, it's life-threatening being in water that cold, isn't it? It really is. Mm. And as you say, you can see he's trying to climb out, and who knows whether it was planned or not. I'm assuming not. You're right. It's like, because he's at that melted edge, because the helicopter's fallen down, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So that's also hot. And it's falling away from him. So I'm in this scene for the moment, but I'm not sold yet on what's going on in the arc of the story, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I'm the same. I think I'm with you on that. Like, I'm starting to buy the action. I'm like, oh, cool. Mm. We're going to get some, you know, some interesting stuff. But I'm still a bit like, all right, I'm not entirely sure where this, you know, is this going of any interest? But he gets
spoiler alert. I'm not sure that ever really changes.
No, I was going to say, the MacGuffin in this. The other thing is, yeah, weirdly the MacGuffin changes, which is what I was going to get to. But Jackie passes out, but he's rescued. He wakes up in hospital.
It's the FSB, isn't it? Like the...
Yeah, that's what I was just remembering. I was about to say the KGB. It's not the KGB because he even says, isn't he, like, we're the former KGB, we're the FSB. So the Russians start sort of laying it onto him then. This is where, like, I liked your idea of Tinker Tailor, soldier spy. This idea, you could be playing this of even Jackie saying, like, well, who? Like, you know, which side should I be playing for now? Like, you know, you could play it up and be like, well, the Americans are actually the baddies and we're trying to keep this out of the hands of, you know, potential, the CIA, we're going to sell it off, you know, much like they did with, you know, drugs during Vietnam. Like, you know, this was a false thing. Like, you could play that, but it never quite goes there.
It does hint at it, doesn't it? A couple of times, actually.
Yeah.
Here and then later on as well, when he has the conversation with Alan, I think it is.
Yes.
So yeah. It does sort of give you the bare bones of that, or like the skeleton of that. But yeah, it doesn't do enough, probably.
No, well, it feels like it could be there. Where they could have that, you know, like Jackie on the run could be like, I don't know who to turn to because I don't know who to trust. But it also isn't that interested in going that far.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you do sort of get little glimpses and go, oh, that would have been interesting. That would have been interesting.
Yeah, which, you know, Police Story 1 probably would have done, right?
We
saw, like, the end of Police Story when he's losing his mind and he's fighting the guy and he's going crazy. Like, they were probably a bit braver back then with that kind of idea. This is trying to sell to international markets, isn't it? So I guess they have to hint at
soften
people being bad guys. Yeah, soften, yeah. but not go full bad guy because we've got a lot of markets to sell to.
Yes. Yeah. that's it. That's the thing, isn't it? It does. It feels like this is more of a family adventure, a family action movie, an introduction. As you said, like, you know, you could, 11, 12-year-old could easily watch this and, you know, get something, some fun from it. But this is where the international sort of, like, you know, what's it sort of globe-trotting starts, because he then gets taken to Australia, to a hotel room, as we've said, that contains a koala bear, the tree. It's a nice room, and he obviously this is when he makes reference to Bond. He's got a suitcase full of new clothes. And he's sort of talking to Uncle Bill, who is like clearly. This isn't. This was Uncle. This was Bill Tong's final film. Bill Tong's final film. So, from what I understand, he may have been a little ill when they were doing this, and so that maybe that's why there's a lot of him sitting behind desks, answering the phone. Because he is still a fun presence in this. Like he's still, I like him. But yes, let's get to the koala bear. You spoke to your Australian friend. Let's talk about Australian koala bears in a bedroom.
Well, I just wondered, you know, like, is this a cultural thing? Like, historically, would they have done this? And his answer was categorically no, because they probably claw your face off during the night.
Yeah.
Like, these people see them as these cuddly things, but they're claws. And he said, like, actually, they can be pretty vicious if they feel threatened. So,
yeah. And they carry chlamydia.
Sure.
So, yeah, you don't know, you come back from Australia with chlamydia. You don't know who to blame if there's a koala bear in the room. Could have been anybody. it just feels like such an oddity. But yeah, he's there. And then it sort of, again, we also get this is he's there to sort of, it's where you've got to try and explain. It's a complex story, but like kind of not fleshed out. So just to explain,
there's a lot of moving parts, I suppose, but they don't add up. The cogs don't always add up to it.
No, I tried to sort of, as I was taking notes, so I was like, it becomes so sort of, he's taken to Australia for a reason, because the person that is Jackson Sau. Sue, that's was part of this exchange of the nuclear weapon. His sister and father live in Australia, and his father is terminally ill. So they have gone to Australia to basically keep an eye on him, thinking that when his father dies, it will flush out the guy that they're trying to chase down. So it's kind of like overly complicated. You go, okay, cool. That's why they've gone to Australia. I'm sure it was because they got tax breaks or something else, but
sure,
that's where they're going to Australia. So you have Jackie then meeting Annie, Sue, and the dad who's in the hospital bed and all this other stuff. It's all nice, and then it sort of switches up where he goes in and the father is killed, and. I can't remember which way around it goes. Is it? Yeah, his father is killed. This then puts Jackie on the run because he is now wanted for murder by the Australian authorities.
Yeah.
So there's
before that, you get. Sorry, I was going to say before that again, we're like in a heavy comedy sequence, aren't we? Almost, I guess, like that first police story. Now we've got the setup, and then that first one, we criticised it, and we kind of custard pies in the face, which was cake, but you know what I mean. And we had that whole sequence there. And here we get it, don't we? Like he follows, or he tells Annie that he's a brother, which I think culturally means, you know, he's like one of his best friends or something. I assumed, and gets into the hospital room, then admits who he is. And we got all this stuff, don't we? Because we get the scene with him wearing the koala pants.
Oh, God. I was going to get to that. Yes.
I don't know how you could forget, but I'm sure we get that before dad is killed, don't we?
Yes, it is, because that's how he gets back to the apartment at the hotel, and that's where Nathan Jones and this other guy turns up to attack him.
Yeah.
And so, you're right, he gets, because that's Jackson turns up to ask, why are you here?
Yeah.
And tries to sort of, like, acknowledge him and gets him to strip down. And he asks him to start, because he's been singing. What song is it he sings?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't remember. I wish it should be in... You know, it's there, but I can't quite draw it forwards.
So, he is singing a song, and Jackson, the villainous villain they've been trying to chase down, turns up and asks him to strip down. And, like, he pulls his trousers down. He's basically wearing boxers with a small koala on the front.
Yeah.
Which, with trousers, just look uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Because it's not like a embossed, even embossed, you know, right in that area.
No.
Isn't going to be comfortable. It's like a cuddly toy.
It's literally a soft toy. Sewn to a pair of pants. It's very bizarre. But then he has to like take those down. And then you're right. Then you almost get like the Police Academy level joke where a bunch of he's singing, and a bunch of women walk past and start
the
joining in.
Or something, aren't they?
Yeah, they sort of see him and see his bottom and all sort of stuff, and it's played.
I mean, he looks good.
Oh yeah, fair play to him. Like,
I'm not sure how old he is at this point already, but wow, he's in good shape.
Yes.
You know, I
Yes.
understand why people want to look at his bum.
Yeah. Well, he was born in 54, so 64, 74, 84, 94. So actually, to be fair to him, he's like 42 when he made this film. So he's the same age I am now. And yeah, I don't think there'll be a group of women admiring my bottom at,
And I'm
outside
2 years older than that,
of
and there's definitely
an
no interest in mine whatsoever.
aquarium. Yeah. But you know that there is that sort of the humor, and then again, but this is where they say it's sort of the silliness in there, and then because this is Jackie's humor. I feel this is the Jackie Chan humor. But they just go back to the hotel, and then he gets attacked by two hitmen. Weirdly, in the last couple of weeks, I have now watched Nathan Jones in three films.
Oh,
Just
okay.
spoke for because I watched watch this. Fury Road, Mad Max Fury Road, and the Conan the Barbarian remake with Jason Momoa, and he's in
Okay.
those. So like on my letterbox, sort of all of a sudden Nathan Jones has just like cropped up it this year. It's very bizarre.
Most watched actor this year,
Yeah,
Nathan Jones.
yeah. So yeah, but that again, you know, so basically you've got this thing where it's jumping around the room, and then he jumps out
I
the
love the
window.
sequence. I think it's brilliant.
This bit is really good. And this is what I'm saying. This is where another one where I'm chuckling and I'm actually enjoying it. And then you sort of watch it back and or think back and you go, oh, actually,
Yeah.
that was.
Because the fight is paid for laughs, isn't it? Because he's so big.
Yes.
Jackie does hit him a few times and it's like hitting a brick wall. It's doing nothing. So he chooses to dodge and evade and escape, doesn't he? And the creative ways that he does that through the hotel rooms and then hiding under the umbrella and
I love
climbing up
that
onto
bit.
the
Yeah.
roof. And yeah, all these little moments are really fun. And the whole way through, Nathan Jones is playing like a Russian heavy, isn't he? And he's not impressed and not interested. And the best bit is when he jumps over the pool, doesn't he, by stepping on like a inflatable ring or something.
Yeah.
But then it's when he goes onto the edge of the hotel, isn't it? Proper
Yeah.
vertigo inducing, the way the camera tilts up and
Down.
over
Yeah.
and yeah, straight down. And it's a narrow little ledge he's on. And
Yeah.
that is, of course, Jackie Chan doing that. There's no wires. There's no.
No. It's
Yeah,
like two
that is.
balconies. Two balconies and like an outcrop, isn't it? And he's sort of sat in the outcrop. And he even says to him, like, come and get me. And they just put out like, guns. And he's like, oh,
Yeah, I love
oh,
that. Yeah.
crap.
I
But
thought we were
that.
going to get like a Lethal Weapon type, you know, jump into a pool or something like that.
I
But there
thought that
is
was
no
going to.
pool,
No.
there's just concrete.
Yeah. And that's the bit when it looks down, you're like, oh, yeah, there's no pool or anything like that. But he does go down. And he jumps down onto the next balcony. And he goes down onto. Not just onto a balcony, sorry, onto a window ledge, onto quite a wide ledge. But again, like, this is the way this has been filmed. It made me think of. Crocodile Dundee. And so in Crocodile Dundee, they have the scene where Mick Dundee goes out on the ledge and tucks down the potential jumper there as well. But that when that's done, that's clearly a set. You know, Paul Hogan didn't go out on the edge of a real building and film that. Like that's done on a set and stuff. And so, you know, Paul Hogan's probably like 12 inches off the floor. You can look nonchalant and kind of sort of casual. When you're like, God knows how many stories up and doing this for real, like it's a different story. And I like the fact that you say that the filming, the way the filming is done, all this section where he's on it is filmed down. Like it's not on level. It's giving you that perspective of how far up it is. So yeah, it's one of those where you sort of go, ah, that seems kind of easy, but then you think, oh, no.
Yeah, no way you'd find me doing it, that's for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, it is. It's a fun section. What I'm noticing is though with a lot of this, like we're sort of getting peaks, but we're kind of building, like they're doing stuff, and it's something I think we've mentioned before about this sort of escalation. Rather than just sort of all in at the front, we can feel that there's this sort of escalation coming, because it then does lead to other things, you know. So he does escape. He clumps, jumps into a bathroom where a woman sort of. There says he says to her, he's the window cleaner, and then runs out, bumps into her husband and says, oh, I'm the dry cleaner, and sort of grabs some stuff. So you know, there's little jokes again along the way. And he grabs this sort of fisherman's
I couldn't work out what, yeah, whether it was like a
yeah.
ski suit or like, I guess the joke was that now he's got two warm clothes. He's in Australia when he had not enough warm clothes when he was in
Oh, I haven't thought
Ukraine.
about that because
That's
it is
what I
North
guessed it
Face
was.
because it's North Face that he's wearing. I noticed the logo.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I think you're right. He's wearing ski gear, but he's now in Australia. Australia, in hot Australia. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. That actually makes that more funny. I actually... but again, he ends up spending... he gets... This is where the father has been killed, and he is now being identified in the news. This is all very cliche kind of stuff, and he ends up sleeping on... He literally sleeps on the street. Another joke. He curls up into a doorway, and then another homeless guy is like, you're in my bed. And he goes, is anyone coming in? He goes, no, he's on vacation. So, yeah, I don't know. There's like jokes in this that I'm sort of going like, it's funny, but like feels, I don't know, because I'm watching it in this with as part of this franchise. I'm sort of going, all right, this doesn't feel in tone with those other films. So it feels kind of weirdly jarring, but I am still enjoying the tone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think we spoke about it before. I mean, it's almost like a little sketch show. Skits moments, isn't it, within the narrative arc of the movie? And this is another one of those which works as a standalone piece. If this was on the Far Show or was Mitchell and Webb or something like that, that would be a really good joke. The homeless guy on vacation from his I don't know what you call it, like outside living area,
accommodation.
Like, that's a good joke, but it doesn't feels kind of weird in the arc that we've got going on here and the wider arc of the four movies.
But it does lead us up to the next day. He then goes to find Annie Sue to say, I didn't kill your father. They appear to be setting
preparing for the funeral.
Yeah, I think so. They're setting up for the funeral. There's an awful lot of people there, including her her cousin.
Mm-hmm.
And they identify him as the potential murderer. And it leads into one of my favorite Jackie Chan fights of all time. This is where it's sort of like you go, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. Sticks and ladders, like literally, what are your thoughts on this fight?
Yeah, I think this is up there with the end of Police Story 1, with the end of Police Story 2. Obviously, stunts wise, there isn't the danger as such as of the end of Police Story 3, but the fighting choreography set piece, and I don't know if I read it wrong as I was watching it, but my understanding of the scene was not only is it obviously beautifully choreographed and wonderfully I don't know what you call it, wonderfully performed, I suppose, by Jackie and the stunting crew, but I thought the character of Jackie at this point was trying not to really hurt anybody because of the circumstance. He was just kind of defending himself, and if he had to, he'd knock them away or you know, ultimately you're hitting some of the ladders, some of them are going to get knocked out. But my understanding was there was even that extra element now where like, I'm really trying not to hurt you guys. I'm trying to prove something here. So that really added something to it as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Cause it is, all of his stuff is defensive. Like he's never on the offensive. It's just a bunch of guys with sticks.
One of those like dragon head, I don't know what you call it. Like things you get in like fates and
But you're right, the choreography in this is... And the one thing we haven't really talked about, because we haven't really needed to, I suppose, in some bits, is but the editing as well for this section. Like, it's not choppy. This isn't like, you know, like a Bourne film where it's sort of like every 2 seconds it's a new shot. Like, there's still long shots, but there's clearly been accidents. Just watch the end credits. but the way it's sort of spliced together, like, you don't feel like... Oh, they had to stop that one because that went wrong. Or that, you know, this, it feels well structured so that it flows so incredibly well. It's just really impressive. And it's sort of go on.
So I was just gonna say, just to back up, it's the two things he does best, isn't it? It's action as storytelling, not just for the sake of action. And we've seen that come back in a big way. I think now, I think the best movies now do action storytelling. They understand, thanks to people like Chad Selesky and David Leitch and McHugh in the Mission Impossible movies, they need to keep telling the story. They need to do something with the story. And I think they've all got that from Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
And it's also geography, as you said, like not just editing, I completely agree, but it's understanding the space they're in. And if they move there, what that does to effect. And we've spoken about that, I think, every episode and every police story, is that again, it's something that he really understands, that as a viewer, you need to understand the space they're in and how everyone fits into that.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. Because it works like from a size perspective as well. I think that you feel that jeopardy, again, talking back to the hotel one, I think that's a very good point. You know, one of the things, obviously, that Stanley Tongan, I mean, you know, you say Jackie might be taking a step back, but I don't know, because they feel like there must be discussion of going, if you film from this angle, we're going to get this and we can do that. So, you know, there's coordination with the stunt team, but to get that storytelling, as you say. But you're right, that geography, that idea of location and the size of it, comparing this, which is a small, balcony area at one point where it's all going on, compared to a shopping mall in First Police Story. Yet, you're right, they are treated in a similar way. You know, you have to know, this is a raised platform. We know we're up, and it's a lot smaller, so it feels, it feels compact. So, yeah, you're right. And it works well to be sort of part of that storytelling. And again, like you say about storytelling, I like the fact that instead of going at it, load more guys come out, more sticks. You know, they've all got these more bows, and Jackie just sort of sits down. Where he's just like, yeah, all right. I'm not going to do well on this. But luckily gets saved by Jackson Sue, who turns up and is like, he didn't kill our father. He's been framed. And, you know, that sort of takes us into the next part of the story.
Just before moving on, I just want to mention, I think this has two of my favourite, and it's one of my favourite things about Jackie Chan anyway, when he does like that ow, and he shakes his hands, he does like a, ooh, that hurts moments. This has a couple of beauties in it. And they're the kind of, almost like silent comedy moments that he does so perfectly. Then he gets his hand caught on the ladder at one point.
I was going to say, he does it, he shuts the ladder and goes, oof, yeah.
Yeah, and it just has some, it's a manner that he has when he does that. It just looks funny, obviously on purpose. I'm not laughing at him, I'm laughing with him. It looks funny, and just there's something really good about the way he uses his body in those moments. Because he often does it when somebody has hit him hard.
Yeah.
And he's had to block it. So if they, and he just like a, oh, my arm, or.
Well, it's,
he sells it so perfectly.
Selling it's a really good point, because I think the two things I take from this, and you know, from this, let's say from this fight in particular, where it's not about, it's, you know, the spectacle is in how well the fight is choreographed and how well it's performed, rather than Jackie Chan falling 80 feet from a, you know, a clock tower. One of the things we've sort of highlighted it before, but this more than ever is where I think, you know, I get that connection with Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, you know, those silent era physical comedians that he emulates. You know, he clearly sort of emulates, and you know, that's where you could make that connection. You say to, you know, even to like John Wick and to those other films later on, where a similar sort of thing is used for violence, but. There's that physicality that you could almost turn the volume off. You know, I listened to the dub version as you did. So you turn this off solo and you can just watch that, and you can, you know, you can follow those sort of those things. And that's a real sort of level of expertise and a sort of, you know, something to be applauded. And that will happen again. There's this one other area where I'm like, that I feel that. But yeah, this goes into my next. We progress the storytelling. We now sort of have confirmation that the Russians are the bad guys, and that this is all been a setup to get the bomb and da 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 da. And so they are going to use Annie and Jackson Sue's father's funeral as a lure to bring out the Russian mob. Because that's who it is. It's the FSB are actually working as the head of the Russian mob. And I really love this as well. There's two bits in this that work for me, just work really well. He comes out, they have it, it's all a bit of a setup. You see these bits and pieces. It's a big procession. You've got the dragons going, and you've got these guys on stilts, and the news are all covering it because this guy was a big sort of philanthropist and businessman and all this other stuff. And then when this guy from the FSB gets caught in the middle of it, and he's confronting Jackson Sue, and Jackie just says "up," and all the umbrellas go up. And it's just again. I'm like, there's this little bits. So I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. This is you know, well thought out. And then you go for a chase. We get into a chase scene, like a pretty solid chase scene. Again, as you say about geography, like, this goes all over the place, this chase scene. This is probably the first big spectacle in the film where I'm like, yeah, I'm loving this. This is like, you know, I've enjoyed the fight. I love the fight, but this feels akin to like Rush Hour or Lethal Weapon, or, you know, you're going to get sort of a car chase. You're going to get like rushing through, like, you know, fights through a shopping center. Quite a funny joke where he lifts her up, puts her on the lift, and then the elevator goes up. So yeah,
because he stays on the stilts for quite a while as well, doesn't he? Like, he's doing some of the Jackie Chan stuff on his stilts, which is pretty impressive as well. Yeah, I really like this scene. I think you've got guys on rooftops, you've got rockets going off, you've got guns firing everywhere, and then you're right. Then we get like, we go into a mall, funnily enough, actually, and we get a Jeep crashing through there, kind of Blues Brothers style.
Yeah,
and all of it all makes sense. I know where everybody is. I know what's going on. I spent March watching a lot of Michael Mann movies, so I've continued my like movie themed months, and I did March All Man. And to an extent, this kind of had that when he does, you know, the shootout and Heat, and even like Black Hat, which is not very good compared to his filmography. It's a fine as a movie, but the scene at the end when that's in a procession, he has this sense of like, we know very similitude, everything feels very real with his, but if things feel dangerous because the amount of bodies that are there, it feels real, it feels compact, and because of this procession, this big funeral, this feels the same. Like, you're scared for all these bystanders that are there, you're scared for those people that are in the mall as the car comes crashing through, and it just has this real sense of realism to it, which sounds kind of funny to say compared to all the other stuff we've been talking about.
I think it's because it's practical. You get that sense of even when it's like a bit slapstick, you still get that sense of sort of physical danger. Julie and I were last night, actually, very recently, talking about Mad Max Fury Road and discussing exactly the same thing. Like, you know, the color saturation and the craziness that's going on. That, you know, you've got like the guitarist on the back of a truck and all sort of crazies going on. However, when you see things crawling and falling off the you know, the big wagons and the big vehicles, you're like, oh no, that's happened. This feels like it's, you know, there's a physical danger to that. And this feels the same because it feels practical. Like, you know, oh yeah, Jackie Chan's on stilts, and when he loses the stilts, he's still doing that stuff. And, you know, Annie Sue is, she's on that elevator, it goes up. You know, it's all coordinated.
Yeah.
It feels legit, as in, you know, you could have been on the streets and watched this being filmed. This is not in a studio somewhere. And I think you're right, that contributes to that sort of tactile sense of danger that even in a comedy you sort of need. Because if it never feels like anyone's in danger, then what's it matter?
That might be important later.
Yeah. Yeah. So it plays out well. I'm enjoying it. And again, I'm all on board for this. Again, you've still got the physical humor. The fact is, when he takes his stilts off, he's still got the incredibly long trouser.
Yeah.
And she's standing on them.
And trips him up. Yeah. It's real.
So one of the things, again, as we're talking about it, I think you and I have even sort of talked about this in other films, not this franchise, but in the past. And I definitely talk about it with others. Films where a dramatic moment or an action scene is undercut by a joke. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm very much of, you know, I'm not the biggest Taika Waititi fan. You know, I think he's fine. I think some of his films are good, some of his films aren't. But he did that very much for me. Like, Thor Ragnarok and Love and Thunder is very much that. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of those films because of that reason. Like, you'll get a big dramatic scene and then it's undercut by a joke. And I'm just sort of like, yeah, it means you're not taking this serious. And because it sort of pokes fun at the action, but where Jackie is doing this, it's still part of the action. Like, it's a pratfall, it's a physical joke, but it's in keeping with the humor that you've been, or the thing that you've been doing. So
yeah, and they're still in the chase to get away. I think that's important.
Yes.
It's not after the chase.
No,
which perhaps would be the way that maybe with TT or some of these other films that we could reference make the mistake. It adds to what is continuing. The jeopardy will continue, but it's still a funny little aside moment in the movie. Yeah.
it's like a moment of levity to sort of go, you've just had this crazy bit, here's a moment of levity, but we're going to have to carry on. Like the Japanese estate is still there. And so that's why I think it works better. But yeah, then obviously this continues and we get to...
is it Underwater World, I think it's called?
It's Underwater World.
Which I think it's a real... I thought that was the worst named fake sea park ever. Turns out it's a real name of real sea park.
Oh, really?
Park.
Yeah. Fair enough. I was like, because I was looking at what year this was. And I was like, is this a Kevin Costner joke? Is this?
Yeah.
Like...
yeah.
But they do. They go to hide out there, and you know, it's this is where it starts. The water park is where it starts to decline a little bit for me.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get, you know, this is where it sort of becomes jumbled. But like, it's all sort of. Because I'm sort of not so much falling off, but I'm leaning into sort of grown territory for some of the bits and pieces.
Yeah.
I'm like, the story doesn't even seem to be coalescing at any point now.
No, I think it's a poorly chosen location, because I think when we've discussed before, like Police Story 2, the factory, we've got this factory. Great. What can we do? Well, these bits do that and they do that. And I can fall down this chute. And like, I think you were very insightful in how you spoke about that, that sense of we'll decide where we're going to go. And then we'll base all the action off what we've got available to us. You know, we've got a train and we've got a helicopter. Okay. Well, can we jump a bike on a train? Mm. Yeah. Why not? You up for that, Michelle? Yeah. Okay. So, here, though, it's like, we've got this underwater pot. What can we do here? Well, we can have a joke with poisonous sea urchins and we can dive down into a tank. But, yeah, I think just almost anywhere else is almost what I would say. Like, I just think this is, the concept is flawed, and it just takes them down roads that mean there's no way to recover, really.
If this was done as a sort of a single comedic section, and we've, you know, you said about those vignettes, those sort of like, you know, sketches within it. If it was done as a single thing, it would be fine, because you'd be like, oh yeah, cool. They used an aquarium, excellent. And then they went off and did something more exciting.
There is one bit that really works later, actually, which you could have done. That bit work. That bit is good.
Yeah, I think we'll sort of get to it. But I think that's the thing, that it sort of stays here and it sort of progresses here, and you're like, you know. You, like you say, so basically they get, the chase continues to the place. They get, you know, the Russians turn up, and then there's a whole thing with, like, say, sea urchins.
She's got a canister, hasn't she? That her brother has sent her.
Yeah, the weapon is not. They've got the weapon, but it's not usable without this canister. So they've got to put it back together. So you end up, again, like the MacGuffin's changed now. Like, this is the third MacGuffin in the film. You started with the suitcase nuke. Then it was Jackie clearing his name, which he hasn't done with the authorities yet, as far as I'm aware.
No, true.
just with the family, and now it's this canister, to activate the nuke. So it's always like, I don't know. I always think about this. You know, in the Mission Impossible 3. J.J. Abrams one did, and it was just called the Rabbit Foot, and you never knew what it was in the film. Mm-hmm. It was like, and I kind of like that film where it's like, it's irrelevant.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. To the start of the movie, which is the end of the movie, when they're talking about, like, get me the rabbit's foot. At that point, Ethan Hunt still doesn't even know himself.
Yeah,
he just can't knows answer that question because he doesn't know what it is.
No, and that sort of, you know, at least there. Honest about this thing, what the MacGuffin is, like, it can be anything, but I think by having multiple, it breaks this film up in a weird way. But yeah, they have the things like the urchin joke where they fall into the things, and you know, it's fine. It was done. I don't know if you know this joke was done again by the Baywatch action comedy film with Zac Efron and
The
Rock.
I've not seen it.
It's kind of worth seeing. It's kind of fun, but like, it's not great. Don't expect, you know, too much. Mm-hmm. And then let's just get to it. They go in the water.
Yes, they go in the big. It's Chekhov's shark, right?
Yes, that's just what I'm trying to get to. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they go into the water and there's a big fight scene, but there's a shark in there.
Because earlier Annie had said, "If you don't move, the shark won't bother you. I'm not sure that how it works.
I'm not
going to test that theory out. But that's in this movie, that's how it works. It's like a T-Rex.
Yes.
If you stand still, if you float still, which is impossible, the shark won't bother you. Yeah.
The Jurassic Park laws are adhered to.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's weird, this scene, this whole fight sequence underwater. You know, they're swapping air, they're using sort of the, you know, all that fine just so they can stay underwater. I'm glad they thought about that so it doesn't look like someone's holding their breath for 30 minutes.
Mm.
All good, fine with that. But it's the punching and kicking that really starts to bother me.
It just goes on forever as well. Yeah, there's a couple of times I think like Jackie doing like a somersault and a double kick. I think that's right towards the end of the mm-hmm. final guy. And that they kind of work. But you're right. Like it's like speed to speed too. It's, you know, you've put them somewhere that's inherently slow.
Yeah.
So it's silly. And as we alluded to right at the start, like Top Secret has already been out and been gone in the 80s.
That's 80s. Yeah.
So. But they must have known that, and again, you know, that is a spy spoof movie. So they must have known that had come, and they're kind of riffing on that.
What kind of possibly, but I don't think that was their touch point.
No. But they must have known that existed.
Yes, but they're clearly going for the Bond
Thunderball. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Thunderball is clearly the touch point because they've got they even use like the spear gun and you know, the sharks are in it. But the other factor in this is, like I say, yeah, not only is the kicking and punching slow and stuff, they've got one shark that's in the tank with them, which is fine. Again, they've got a real shark. That's good. But the problem by having a real shark in there is that when you introduce the fake shark, it looks like you've gone on the Universal Studios Jaws ride and it looks crap. And you're just sort of like, yeah, all right, you know, someone should have rethought this through a little bit.
You've seen it earlier, haven't you? It like bursts out the tank. Literally, as you said, like I've not been on that experience, but I've seen the footage, like when it bursts out the water. Yeah.
Mm.
And then they use that same shark, don't they? It's coming out of like a shipwreck, the back of a shipwreck. Because one guy goes in there, doesn't he? And he gets eaten and then there's a big burp.
Yeah, and it sort of spits out his air tank and stuff.
Yeah, and then it bursts out later, doesn't it? And it's super fake looking.
It doesn't look good.
Do you know what? It's like those things kids get where you press, you know, like a litter picker, you press the trigger and the thing at the top goes
snaps.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly like that. The only part in this whole sequence that sort of, again, made me smile knowing that there's a real shark in there is when a guy pulls out a knife and the best he can do is cut Jackie's thumb.
Mm-hmm.
And then so he cuts the other guy's thumb back and they keep putting their thumbs in their mouth. That was a bit where I was
clever.
Like, yeah, that's clever. That's where I'm like, oh, that's thought through. That's funny. Everything else is kind of lame, to be honest. Mm. And then we get to like the big, like you said, there's a big moment at the end of this where I don't understand. Like, try and explain this to me. So we see that there's people watching, as you do when you go to an aquarium. It's a big glass tank. You can look into it and you can see that there are people doing, you know, underwatery bits. They're there to watch the fish. And everyone's like, it's a show! Isn't this amazing? And all of a sudden, like, the FSB guys, the Russian guys turn up and shoot out the glass.
Mm. And then run away.
And then run away.
I couldn't get that either. No, I wasn't sure what was going on there.
Because it's, you know, and they start shooting out other parts. So, like, there's jets of water coming out the side, which...
So that's the bit I thought worked. It looks cool. And Jackie trying to get through those, I was totally sold that it was actually really quite hard work to try and get past those.
Oh, that looks kind of painful when it's blasting at him. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like this at the start of Gladiators. This obviously is on my mind because we've been watching on BBC recently. The very first obstacle they've got to do is jump over and then under like those rolly, like, do you know what I mean? Got like
yes.
It's almost like that, like one of the water jets is high and one's low, so
you've got to like dive over and claw under it. And
it's trying to find like the path through in order to, and at some points it's hitting him full in the chest, isn't it, and pushing him back, and
it looks
I'm
like
really
he's got force. Yeah it looks like he's got force,
and at that point they've got the canister, haven't they, so he uses that as a way to block his escape. So that bit I like. I'm totally sold on. It's the 15-ish minutes before that, unfortunately. Yeah, yeah. That is.
And, but this is where, again, like, if they'd have made that a much, much shorter sequence and then added in an end and a better big ending, like, you know, I'd be much more satisfied with this.
In the tank, shark eats somebody. The guy shoots the tank out to get the canister, does the water jets, but then we get another 10-minute sequence outside doing something exciting. That would have been much, much better.
And they could have still had the same final stunt.
Yeah.
But, you know, but they could have led up to it more. Because they do, they get away. It goes, because obviously it's an aquarium, so it's near a harbour.
Mm-hmm.
So they get onto a boat, they've got the canister, and they've got Annie.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets out, runs around, sees them, jumps into a car. And again, we've been talking about the practicality. And this is still practical, but, like, you know, the practicality of this. But basically, he lines up the car, and there just happens to be a ramp right next to the edge and of the sea. And he drives up it, jumps, and it lands in the boat and doesn't kill anyone.
No, this is the bit that doesn't really work for me. I agree with you. The shot underneath as the car goes over the ramp, over the harbour, is practical and looks cool. Yeah. The car landing on the boat.
Jackie's not in there. Let's be clear.
Yeah, no, he's not in there, and it's also clearly on wires, and it's very slowly being lowered down onto this boat. So that was the one I was talking about, like, in comparison to the snowmobile, which looks dangerous and hits him, and this one doesn't feel.
It feels like a stunt.
It does, yeah. And do you know what? Too Fast, Too Furious does this better.
Yeah.
And that, there's not many things I would say. I don't get me wrong. I like those movies, what they are, and I'm talking about them as part of Back to Filmography because of the state, of course. But, you know, there's not many things I would say the Fast and Furious movies do better than Jackie Chan can do. Let's put it that way. They do this stunt exactly the same, better.
Yes, I'll accept that. I agree with that. Yeah, this is just a weird...
Mm.
One of the things you said earlier on is they're trying to sell this to multiple overseas territories, different markets. This feels like a concession. To that kind of thing of like, okay, we're going to have a big car stunt because car stunts are cool. Instead of Jackie doing some crazy stunt of him, I don't know, jumping off a helicopter onto the boat or something, or there are many things they could have done. So yeah, I don't know. It just feels, it's not unimpressive. In another film, it would have been fine. If this was like a police academy film, or even some sort of like minor Bruce Willis film or something of the mid-90s, I'd be like, yeah, cool. There's a car lands on a boat. Fine.
Striking distance, yeah.
Yeah, striking, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking of.
It's anticlimactic, isn't it? If you trace backwards through, you know, trains and helicopters and bikes in 3, you know, fireworks factory explosion in 2, and the mall hole slide in 1, it just feels, I mean, look, just even talking about it, I'm amazed they thought this was the way to go.
Yeah, it's weird. Like Jackie Chan, you know, I don't know what he thinks of this film, but it just feels neutered at this point. You know, we've had all this stuff, and I'm just like, this has lost its edge in a, and not even a sort of like, I want, you know, broken bones and ridiculous stunts. Yeah, everything that we applaud the ladder fight for.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of missing by the end of the film.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's, as I say, as you said, it's a disappointment. It sort of feels underwhelming, and you sort of go, oh, okay. But Jackie's performance in this whole film is still really good.
There's lots of highlights, yeah.
I think Jackie's performance is probably one of the strongest of the franchise, because he clearly feels more comfortable doing this stuff now, and you know, he's confident, and it's all fluid. But, like, yeah, I don't know. Just the end of this feels just deflating.
This is the end. Yeah, I think this is the end of the police story saga, as such, you know, in inverted commas, for these 4 Kevin, Jackie movies. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it's ending on a high, does it?
No, and it's kind of disappointing for that, really. especially because it's, I think maybe this is the reason. The other irony of it all is, you said selling this to the, you know, other territories. This is the one that didn't get released in the States.
Yeah, which is mad, isn't it?
Yeah,
because it feels such like a big success as well, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it's a weird, the fact that this didn't make it to the States. The others sort of did in different ways.
Because this is Rumble in the Bronx kind of era, isn't it? Kind of just pre Rush Hour and.
Yeah, Rush Hour's 98, so this is 2 years before. So Rumble in the Bronx, I think, is about the same.
96 as well, I think, isn't 96. It? Yeah.
And that's Stanley Tong as well. So, you know, it's this is the year that he is breaking that barrier in the States. And this film feels like prime to have could have done that as well, really. So... Yeah, it's an odd one. To be honest, you just go, why wasn't this? I mean, it's not the best by any stretch, but like,
no,
weirdly, like, how come this one didn't? Yes, I don't know. But yeah, we get that, and then, you know, we get. I think that's all right. That's it. There's no, you know, Dune and White. Sort of, that's it. As with all the others, it sort of ends on that point. And the point we should highlight is, because I did think about this when I watched the film, he may have cleared his name with the family, but he still hasn't with the authorities. So hopefully he's able to sort of have people on his side that be like, no, he didn't do it. We know they were the Russian mob, and that's why he drove a car into a boat. So. Yeah, one of the things that's interesting about this one though is, if you look at the artwork that was done for the poster and the way this is called First Strike rather than Police Story 4, although it's acknowledged as a Police Story part of the franchise, Jackie Chan's First Strike, and there's a lot of Jackie Chan's films at this point, but it definitely feels like they were heading more into a sort of an international Bond era. Kind of, they were looking to do something like that.
Yeah, and this is, so if this is 96, this is the year after GoldenEye as well, isn't it? Was that 95?
95, yeah.
And that was a massive success, wasn't it? So I can see that they'd want to capitalise on that. That makes total sense.
Yeah.
To sort of try and combine his...
stylings with...
Yeah, and his status and his burgeoning success in the States with the relaunch of, you know, that kind of... that style, Bond spy franchise, and GoldenEye did sort of change things up quite significantly, didn't it, for the Bond franchise? So I can see why they've done that, and I could see that being kind of a James Bond poster as well. Scrolling through a few as we were talking,
yeah, I think that they really are. You can see they're leaning into that, you know, the Bond kind of aesthetic with some of the posters.
Jackie Chan will return in Second Strike. You could almost see coming up in the credits. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, I think it's kind of disappointing. You know, although this film is not as good as the others, as we said, there are highlights. I'm kind of disappointed it didn't get to continue.
I'd watch more. And do you know, I only watched it 2 days ago. I would, if we finished this and Mel just said, oh, let's stick something on, Dad, I would happily watch it again, not a problem.
Yeah.
We've probably been a little bit critical of it, but I think that's only because we wanted the bar's been a lot set. From it. Well, yeah, that's
the
it.
The bar's
yeah.
set kind of high for this franchise. Yeah. And if you were to work backwards and started with First Strike and then went backwards, if this was the first Jackie Chan film you saw, you know, as a young teen or as a kid, like, you'd still be impressed. You'd still be like, oh my God, there's a whole fight sequence underwater. Then there's a whole ladder fight. And then there's a whole skiing bit. And he falls off a helicopter. And like, you've got all those bits. And, you know, you think, okay, cool. And then you work back and you eventually get to him hanging off a bus, you know, with an umbrella and all the stunts with the glass in the mall in the first one. And you're kind of like, oh, like, you know, yeah, that sort of, you know, that's where it started. Yeah, it's not a terrible film, but I think that's it. It's not, we're critical because of what we've come from.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think we've been totally fair in what we said. I think we've celebrated what needs to be celebrated. We've called out lots of positives in terms of the choreography and the editing and the acting and the stunt work. And it's just I guess it's inevitable. You want that last one, you know. We've spoken about John Wick. You know, we've had four John Wicks. We've had the same number of John Wicks as we have police stories. They do feel like they've kept growing and growing and growing. The world's grown, but also the quality of the action has grown. And whereas this does feel like it's sort of scaled down somewhat. It's just, it's a shame.
Well, it sort of jumped onto another track, hasn't it? Like where you've had sort of an adult-ish action movies before. This is Jackie in definite family entertainment territory.
Yeah, that's fair. That's right.
I think that's sort of where this lands. Which he does well. You know, I've seen some of his later stuff, you know, Tuxedo and
Spy Next Door.
Spy Next Door and a couple of those where he sort of, you know, I've watched those. They're kind of fun. So he does that well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you know, having watched these though, you know, and you obviously watched, you know, you've watched other, you had Jackie Chanery, so you watched more.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, you know, when you sort of like, did you go back and watch some of his kung fu films as well, sort of Drunken Master and all that kind of thing?
Or... I watched Drunken Master 2, but I didn't go back to the first Drunken Master, no.
But when you consider, like, you know, Jackie Chan in that pantheon of action heroes or action stars, let's say, of the 80s and 90s, where do you place him now?
It's such an interesting question, that, isn't it? Because he always balances those wonderful choreographed and dangerous stunts and fighting skills with these moments of, at times, clownish kind of levity and skits. It doesn't reduce his status, I don't think, but I just think of him in a different way. My brain doesn't quite put him into that same place, whereas, you know, like Arnie and Stallone, and then Bruce Lee would fit in that place. But Jackie Chan just doesn't quite fit there because of the nature and the tone and the style of his filmmaking. I mean, I think it's undeniable, and I think, you know, I've said it and you said it across all of these episodes, that he revolutionized, he changed, he continued to for many more years. And, you know, we've called out franchises that are still running today that we believe are being affected by things that he did. So I think his influence is undeniable. I don't think I would ever place him in my personal kind of top five. He wouldn't make my Mount Rushmore of action heroes, but that's not to diminish who he is and what he's achieved.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I agree. It's an interesting sort of comparison. I think, you know, you say he clearly, you know, has definitely had an impact, obviously, on Hollywood as we see it today. And action films as we see them today. And I think he was doing it before I was even aware of him. I know that Sylvester Stallone was a big Jackie Chan fan and actually considered or approached the studio to see if they could have Jackie Chan play Simon Phoenix in Demolition Man.
Wow. Okay.
I think it would have been a very different film. Mm. I think Wesley Snipes owns that role, you know, wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's that thing of we, you know, as raised, let's say, on sort of, I was particularly raised on like Western Hollywood action movies.
Same.
And you have that a tonal kind of idea, don't you, of sort of everything that Arnold did and stuff that Sly did, you know, everything, whether it be good or bad, you know.
Yeah. And then Van Damme for me really was the next one.
Yeah, exactly. Then you get Van Damme, maybe a slice of Seagal. But then, like you say, and even up to like Statham now. There's a tone of, or a type of action movie. Like the martial arts entered it, and Statham is obviously, you know, incredibly skilled and talented, and you know, in particular with the transporter films is where I sort of first came across Statham in that sort of form.
Mm.
But let's say the comedy is never in the action, is it? In those films, the comedy is in the quips after, you know. But this is why it's interesting, as we've said, like the action in this, the martial arts, the choreography and stuff, everything down to, as you said, even the subtlest things of his getting his fingers caught in a ladder and going, ooh, like it's the subtlest things, but it's a different tone. But then as a package, one of the things that keeps crossing my mind is, and you've used the term several times in this episode, is Jackie Chan and his stunt crew. And it's the fact that, like, he's creating this. He directed the first two. It's his stunt crew. He's a bit like, what's the, is it Little Britain, where they had a joke with Dennis Waterman, where he was sort of like, I'll write the theme tune, sing the theme tune. Jackie Chan's like the full package. Like, he's like, I'll write it, I'll direct it, I'll choreograph it with my stunt crew. I'll sing the theme tune in one case.
Good call back in this one as well. You're a bad singer.
Yes. That's a really good point. Yeah. So it does. He's sort of like an anomaly in all that.
He's like an industry by himself, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. But because I think we know him. I was introduced to him more specifically. I think, you know, I'd seen Rumble in the Bronx when I was a teen, on video, but really it was, and that was, but that was just before Rush Hour came out. Mm-hmm. So I think a friend of mine's older brother was like, I've heard this film's coming out, you should really watch this first. So he showed us Rumble in the Bronx, and then we got Rush Hour. So I know Jackie Chan. My entrance to Jackie Chan was through a Western action film. And it's only really, and sort of as I've got older, I've gone back and watched, you know, others of his films. So it's I don't know. He has this interesting place in that sort of, you know, I don't know. I think do you think he gets lauded enough by audiences today?
Probably. I mean, probably not. But then we're talking Western, aren't we? I mean, I don't know how he's considered back in Hong Kong. I don't know how he's considered within that industry. I'm sure there. I literally saw a clip the other day, actually, funnily enough, came across my timeline of Quentin Tarantino introducing him at the 1995 MTV Movie Awards and getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, which feels crazy now to think that was nearly 30 years ago.
Lifetime Achievement. He's like, oh, whatever. I'll be back in 30 years. Give me another one.
He even said it in his speech. He was like, to be getting this now, I feel like I've still got a long way to go. And we just talked about the fact he was probably only sort of 40-ish then. Yeah. So, I think his legacy is secured forever, isn't it? There's no doubt. And I think I've got the same. It's fascinating hearing you say that. I think my lead into Jackie Chan is probably virtually identical to yours. I think maybe I'd seen Police Story or part of a movie before, but I definitely seen Rumble in the Bronx. And then, you're right, Rush Hour. Mm. But I had seen all of Bruce Lee's. I'd seen most of John Woo's by that point already. So I don't know why he had passed me by. I don't know why it wasn't somebody. I think I had the same thing. I had somebody saying, like, you know, oh, let's watch The Killer, because I've heard from my older brother this is amazing. Yes, it is. So I'm going to watch Better Tomorrow too. So I spiraled out in my own journey. I don't know why I didn't have anybody doing that for Jackie Chan.
I think there's an interesting point. You know, we'll start to wrap up on this in a minute, because I think you're right. I think one of the things is, though, we grew up, you know, growing into teenagers through the 90s. It's like the VHS years. It was really that growth of home entertainment and stuff. Everything was on VHS. Well, that's what I thought. But the gaps of things that were released on VHS in the late 80s and 90s is huge. One of the things, you know, you talk about, like, you know, you said about the Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee, because of his legacy and because of, you know, his tragic death and stuff, he left quite a compact, you know, legacy of films. And so his films were sort of like, we can do them in a box set. Even as videos, they were released in a box set. So they were available to be released. And Golden Harvest and those sort of, like, you know, and Toho, like, Godzilla was never really, you couldn't get Godzilla for love and money on VHS over here. So there's a lot of sort of Asian cinema that just was not released unless it was guaranteed to be bankable. And you're right, I just don't think Jackie Chan had made enough of a splash until later on to have that guarantee, where distributors were like, of course I'm going to release all these sort of late 70s, early 80s kung fu films. And so, I just don't know. I just think, like you say, that we were just unable to see these.
Interesting.
Because I think Rumble in the Bronx, I remember, like, my friend's older brother, when he had it, like, that was one of the few Jackie Chan films that was released over, you know, over here. And that's because it was a quite a big American success. So, I don't know. It's a weird one. you know.
It is, because probably even Jet Li by this point is making more of, you know, Lethal Weapon 4 is coming out not long after this, isn't it?
Not
That's
yet.
Late 90s. Yeah, so, and I think I was aware of him from, I don't know, something from his early filmography. So it's interesting that, yeah, there was something about Jackie Chan that they didn't think we wanted. And I think we've discussed it, I think back in the first piece story, you know, a lot of his films were period settings to begin with. Maybe that was a bit of a problem. I'm not sure. Yeah, it's an interesting one, because the next big wave I can think of is J-horror.
Yeah.
Around the turn of the millennium, and that was massive, wasn't it? And of course, so then, you know, they were all available. Well, and I think it was something like... Yeah, well, no, sorry, go on.
Well, one of the things that changed as well, that you know, starts to change, is the introduction of DVD.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was about to go on. Love Film, I think, filled a lot of my gaps. When that started as a service, it was like, oh, I've never seen that. And it was a way for me to watch them all, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's when it started to change, because DVD, it could be produced, it could hold more information, you know, the picture quality was better, all that kind of stuff. And so, and because it was smaller, it was easy, and so distribution became cheaper, I think, and stuff. So, and so on, I think, you know, we live in a golden age, I think, at the moment, of being able to access through streaming, you know, and also just through those boutique Blu-ray and physical media houses. Like, I love those films. I've gone, since Supercop, I am starting to go down the Michelle and Cynthia Rothrock rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah, wonderful.
You know, so, and all those, a lot of those, even now, are, like, released for the first time in the UK. And you're just like, this film came out in 1987. Like, that's that's insane. So I think, yeah, we do live in a good time. Even YouTube. I mean, I'm doing, working on some stuff with regards to, like, Pulp Heroes, you know, The Shadow, Doc Savage, The Green Hornet. All those serials from, like, the 40s and stuff are all on there. I'm not recommending them, but they're there to watch if you want to. I think it just goes to show that the wealth of cinema that, you know, we weren't able to access as kids, and we just didn't know. So Jackie Chan just passed us by, unfortunately. But not anymore.
We're making up for it now.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, one thing I would say is this is the final episode, for at least for Police Story, the original quadrology, because we're obviously keeping it within the 20th century. But this may not be the end. You know, I think, well, obviously I'm coming back at some point for back to the filmography. I've got there's more Staith to discuss.
Yes, you're back for Wrath of Man, I think, aren't you?
Wrath of Man, yeah. Which should be coming soon. But I think you're right. I'd like to do this again. I think we should pick another little, you know, there's like a little box set, as it, if you will, you know, of 20th Century Geek box sets. I think that's what we're going to do. You know,
I love it.
Talk through a quadrology of films that we can enjoy. Maybe we'll pick a different genre next time. We'll see. But yeah, Jack, I'd love to have you back on.
Yeah, I mean, I've had an absolutely great time. It's been a joy watching the films, and then I always get something from you, whether I'm a listener or whether I'm on as a guest with you. There's always something insightful. So I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
No, thank you. This is, you know, one of the things I love doing this, because it challenges me to think about these things, and much yourself, you know, listening to Back to Filmography, and whenever you're on other people's podcasts, it's always good. Like, you know, Season's Greetings, you know, it makes me go back and watch things and go like, oh yeah, that was awesome. I should go back and watch that. So yes, but anyway, before we do wrap up, where can people find you, and what are you doing at the moment?
So yeah, sadly, the Staith is coming to a close. It's been a great run. It's been a couple of years. I need to decide. I keep umming and ahhing. So how I feel about moving forwards, we'll have to see. But that will keep me going until about August. And then whether I take a mini break or whether I roll straight into, whether I just can't decide myself and I put it out into the world and let somebody decide for me, is probably the way I'm leaning. I'm just being so indecisive, and let fate decide what I should do.
Steven Seagal, I'm throwing it in there. I'm going to make you do it. No, I'm joking. I would never put anybody through that.
Yeah, I mean, talking of early box action, maybe the first four Steven Seagals, but then no thanks.
Yeah, that drops off very quickly.
Yeah. I think I've mentioned before, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme was the first person I thought of doing. But then when I looked at kind of post mid-90s, I was like, oh, Jesus, no, actually.
I would say of his, Yeah, there's a couple of nice. I love you said about Jean Wu early on. I adore Hard Target.
Oh,
I
yeah.
unabashedly love that film. Universal Soldier, another one. That'd be a good franchise to do. That's got four good films in it. But yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme's another one where like early in the early 2000s it just goes into direct DVD and some of them are very
Oh,
tough to watch.
yeah. Some practically unwatchable, some of them, I would say.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Interesting for you to pick. I think there's some there's some good ones and some bad ones out there. But yeah, but where can people find you and where can people find Back to Filmography so they can catch up?
Yeah, thank you. Mostly available on X. I do sort of dabble on Instagram, but I just can't consistently be bothered to work out how it works, to be honest. I keep posting things and they go to different places, so I keep toying with it and giving up. But yeah, mostly available on X, and then the show. And thank you for mentioning Season's Greetings. I'm terrible at mentioning my other shows. All available on Spotify and all the usual places for podcasting,
Yeah,
and through Comics in Motion.
that's it. Yeah, just find Google them on all podcast catchers. They're fantastic. And also, let's say, because the great thing is you have so many different guests from the Comics in Motion crew on there. Obviously, sort of Chris and Dave and Tony and Rhea and all the others that sort of come on and do some great contributions, as I do. And I thought this was a fantastic group to be a part of. But yes, for 20th Century Geek, you can find us exactly. We're on X and all the other sort of mostly the social media platforms under 20th Century Geek. I've even tried to do TikTok, and I'm like you. I'm sort of like I feel I'm aged out of that slightly. Maybe give it a go one day. But yeah, we're available on all podcast catchers. And also, if you like us, leave a review. And go check out the Patreon. There's so much going on the Patreon. We do our me and fellow podcaster Julian Darius from the sister show Stories Out of Time and Space are doing Trekking Through the Twilight Zone. We're coming to an end on that. Done 5 seasons, all the episodes, and also we are getting ready for our next big season. Season 5 of Stories Out of Time and Space is coming, and we're doing the post-apocalypse season. And there's going to be a lot of extra content. We've just finished the Mad Max recordings, ready for Furiosa to come out soon. So yeah, very excited for that. But for now, Jack, thank you very much for coming on. Really appreciate it, and it's been great fun talking Jackie Chan. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much, and we'll see you again soon.